Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've already been listening, well, we consider that a sign of high intelligence. And that's what you got to look forward to this half hour, too, because we're going to be talking with the famous John Leo. I say he's famous because anybody who reads anything, if you've seen John Leo's column, I've been following his wisdom for years within the in U.S. News and World Report. He's also written for USA Today, I think. It's also in newspapers. Hundreds of newspapers have taken his column for a long time. Perhaps you've read his books, and he's our new friend, John Leo. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jim.
It's good to have you here, and congratulations on a great career in writing. I just want you to know that when they asked me if I'd like to have John Lee on my show, I said, you don't have to ask me that. Of course, John Leo is always welcome on my show.
Oh, that's terrific.
And also, you've recently kind of hooked up with some of our buddies at the Manhattan Institute.
Yes, I'm a fellow at the Manhattan Institute here in Manhattan, obviously, and it's a very prestigious, conservative, but nonpartisan policy center. I mean, Rudy Giuliani, who was our best mayor in many, many years, was gracious enough to say, all my ideas are plagiarized from the Manhattan Institute.
Good for him. That's a classic thing to say. Well, I agree with him because, as my audience knows, we have a lot of friends there at the Manhattan Institute, and I'm glad to see that they were able to score John Leo to be part of their organization. John, what you want to talk about? You got the election on your mind, the recent election. You want to give us your idea on what the recent results are going to mean.
Yes, yeah, so we were told by Karl Rove and the Rovians that everything was going to be okay, that a lot of stray Republicans were coming back just in time, and that Democratic bulge was going to be faced down. It's sort of true, but not obviously so. I mean, the Republicans lost almost every close race except Senate in Tennessee. I gave a speech down in Phoenix a couple of weeks ago to conservative college editors, and I said, look, what you have to face here is that the Republicans entirely deserve the rebuke from the voters. Let's not shuffle around and put a bad good face on it. This was a well-earned rebuke that the Republicans went to the people with a very, very small achievement over the last 2 years, and a lot of people responded that way.
John, the biggest indictment I have of the Republicans, and I'm with you 100% on this, is that, you know, if I see any of them, I'm going to say, you know, you got beat by the guy who beat you, or the person who beat you by simply saying, we're not them.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all. That was their only plan, was to say we're not them, and that's about as strong an indictment as you can have.
It is, but it's also good news in a way because I don't think very many people voted for the Democrats or any kind of Democratic agenda. If they had an agenda, I failed to find it during the campaign. Because
they had an agenda, John. They do have an agenda. In fact, they've been very – I have to give them, the Democrats, one thing. They've been very forthcoming about a few things, and one of them is minimum wage. I mean, they don't sneeze without saying minimum wage these days.
Yeah.
Raising minimum wage. And
well,
and also changing the Patriot Act and things like that. Timeline for Iraq. I mean, those are things that they continue to come up with.
Well, I think everybody knows that the Iraq effort is in deep trouble now. The minimum wage thing is such an obvious issue for Democrats. It's almost a no-lose situation. You know, they're going to do it over 3 years, and it won't make that much difference to the economy. And
Well, I disagree with that, John. But go ahead with your the minimum wage is you know, if it doesn't affect the economy, it'll only be because, you know, a lot of people had to work a lot harder. But anyway, go ahead with your thoughts.
Well, I was going to say on the minimum wage, excuse me, issue that so few of the people making the minimum wage are heads of households.
You That's know, right.
Usually, you have retired people and teenagers and. There isn't a lot of point in raising their wages. That just costs jobs. So, but the American public is susceptible to emotional do-good issues. So, it can be presented as a really generous thing.
Who wants to be? I'm making more than minimum wage. So why would I? Why wouldn't I want other people to be to have a higher wage? Well, you know, if minimum wage is a good idea, why don't we make it $20 an hour? That's what
I think.
Yeah,
that's right.
Stand by, John. John Leo is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's with the Manhattan Institute right now. But many of you have read his column for years, and it's a good one. He and I will be right back. It's 22. I'm Jim Blassingame. Here's that little band from Texas to take us out. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with someone that's I kind of feel like is an old friend, even though we've only just met. John Leo, the world famous John Leo, an outstanding columnist for years and in a number of publications, newspapers, magazines, and now a fellow with the Manhattan Institute. And I'm glad to John. I'm glad that even though we've kind of been friends a long time, it's kind of been one sided. Now I'm glad that it was coming back the other way. coming back the other way a little bit. We're talking about what John thinks about. Is going to happen with the as a result of the recent elections, and of course, folks, as you know, I've had to put my two cents into this thing. John, quickly, and I don't want to dwell on it because my audience knows I get on my soapbox about the minimum wage thing. It's not the minimum wage being raised for the 2% of the population that actually work for minimum wage. Mm. The problem is the upward pressure it puts on all wages without creating one ounce, one revolution of extra productivity. That's mm-hmm. the problem. It's the same thing as a tax. Because, John, this is my best example. If I've just gotten a job, if I've been working for a company for a year and I had no skills when I started, and I started at minimum wage, I didn't know anything from anything. I started at minimum wage, and over the year I earned a dollar raise, and I'm so proud of it because I've learned some things. And then they hire you, John. You don't know anything either. You come in at the new minimum wage, which is exactly what I've earned in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, and the boss says, Jim, I want you to train John. And in the during the first day we're training, I'm training you. I say, well, how much are you making an hour? And you say, you know, $7.15 or whatever. And I say, well, wait a minute, that's what I'm making.
Yeah.
It's bad for morale, so I'm going to go to the boss and say, wait a minute, how come the new guy's making as much as I'm making? It's upward pressure on all wages.
Well, I think you're right. It's
a sop to the unions. That's all it is. That's all minimum wage is by the Democrats. It's a sop to the unions.
Well, one of the problems I have with the Democrats is that they promote stances that are really moral gestures. In this case, it's actually economic results, but they're always taking stances that call attention to how moral and decent they are instead of having an effect, positive effect on the culture and economies.
Well, it manifests as some kind of class warfare. There's always everything they do is always a victim involved.
Yes, that's right. Victim politics mm-hmm. very strong in the party.
Yeah. So, okay, what else are we going to see?
Well, first, to analyze the numbers, I pay attention to Mickey Kaus's web output. He's you have to just punch in the word Kaus Files, KAUSFILES. He's a Democrat, but quite conservative, and he's not afraid to say anything that offends anybody in either party. And he was making the point that the Democrats are going around crowing that they had this enormous 1994 style landslide in the congressional races, And it turns out, he says, that it was a 6-point gap nationally. The normal, he finally digs out the information that the normal gap of a winning party is 5 points. So he said, mm-hmm. "How can it be a landslide if it's only 1 point?" Well, the point he was making with good numbers is that nothing important was decided at this election. I mean, there's no doubt that some Republicans irritated many independents,
right.
But there's no indication that anybody has started a landslide toward the Democrats. So everything is up for grabs the next time. Everything.
Well, but also, this was a referendum on George Bush and his foreign policy, John.
I think so, yeah.
There's no question about that. And here's why, and you and I both, I know you saw this a year ago, and I travel around the country talking to people. You do the same thing. And I talked to people who I knew were good Republicans who 3 years ago would have done anything to support George Bush and his foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And a year ago, some of these people, you know, I knew a year ago these people were going to vote Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And these are good. These are people who are long-term Republicans. These are business people who make payroll every Friday. And that one issue was going to make them say, you know what, I'm not voting for Republicans anymore.
Well, that's right. I mean, you can't show so little progress on Iraq and make so many enemies without the voters noticing that.
Mm-hmm. What are some other things that what do you think the Democrats are going to mean for national security? You know, we had the deal where Senator Reid, the Senate leader, came out of the meeting one time and said, "I've killed the Patriot Act," and of course he didn't. But just the fact that he said that kind of sent a chill up my spine, John.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the few Democrats who understand the threat to us are going to try to turn this whole battleship around, the slow-moving Democratic ship that
Joe Lieberman
wants
won.
To sail away from our international role that's been thrust on us by the more lunatic radical Muslims. And
mm-hmm.
Every day you pick up the paper, you see the Democrats on the wrong side of the terror issue, putting it down. I did a column about a year ago in which I said I was tired of going to cocktail parties here in Manhattan and have it explained to me that there's really not much of a threat, that
right.
If they set off a bomb, it'll be no here. It won't be any more serious than a minor industrial accident. And this kind of refusal to look reality in the eye.
It's awfully European, isn't it, that kind of thinking?
Yeah, I mean, these people have the capacity to take out a large Western city with a nuclear weapon. I mean,
take
that seriously. I mean,
well, any city, you're in Europe or the United States, what would that do to on a lot of different fronts? Stand by, John. John Leo, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest. He's a fellow with the Manhattan Institute. He and I will be right back. It's 10 till. Stay with us.
To the microphone. Say that last just as the time bell rings. Wow! I feel good. I knew that I would not.
We're back. It's 7 till. There's the Godfather of Soul, and we're having a great visit with a very soulful John Leo. Outstanding columnist, a great thinker, one of America's great thinkers, and 18 years as a columnist for U.S. News and World Report. Also, newspaper columnist for a long time now, fellow with the Manhattan Institute. John, you want to give us a website? You got one in particular you'd like to tell us about?
Well, it depends on how good your computer is. I just go to Google and type in Manhattan Institute.
There you go. It's manhattan-institute.org, by the way, folks. I just happen to know that one. Hey, John, you were talking earlier about the strategy of the Democrat Party, and I use the term victimologists and that sort of thing. It does seem like they come up with that a lot. I wonder if that kind of an approach isn't a 20th century approach that's being diluted year over year as more and more people are finding their place in the marketplace. What do you think?
I think that's right. But as we were sort of noodling around during the break, that it does have a great hold on people. Look at the colleges. It's very hard for a black, Hispanic, Muslim, a disabled person to reach beyond this assigned group identity. Maybe they will later in life, but on the college campuses, it's so strong that it's almost impossible to break out. You know,
but it's not like, but John, it's not like that in the marketplace.
No, I understand that. I'm just
not in flyover America. I mean, once they get into the marketplace, you know, I mean, no one that I know discriminates against an owner because they're one particular race or color or religion.
Yeah. I think you're right on a long-term trend. I just think you may be underestimating the lingering odor of being assigned to a victim group.
Aren't there people?
It makes you feel good to be a victim, you know.
It can. It's like an itch that you want to scratch, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
But here's my question. Here's the provocative question of the day for you, John. Isn't making people feel like victims and trying to differentiate everybody from one from the other and pointing blame, that kind of thing, isn't that a lot like what's happening in Iraq right now?
I think so, but I think you may be underestimating the psychic payoff of being in an identity group. You know,
yeah.
A lot of people have given up religion. They don't really believe in any cause. And all of a sudden, you can be a Hispanic, a Muslim, a Sikh, whatever, a Hindu, and have fellows who rally around you and give you support. And that kind of false security is a great lure for identity politics.
What Pat Buchanan calls multiculturalism.
Yeah, the multiculturalism has been a great disaster in America. It basically is a cover for anti-Americanism and anti-individualism. So,
what should we do about that, John? Should we let it run its course, or do something about it?
I think you have to undermine it. I think multiculturalism is what Britain and France are now coping with. I mean, they have been so mild in enforcing their own laws in their own ways that it's shocking them that they now have a huge, dangerous Muslim population that they haven't taught to speak English and to obey their law.
They haven't assimilated it. They either haven't encouraged them to assimilate or they haven't allowed them to assimilate. I think France hasn't really allowed them to assimilate. The United States, you can assimilate if you want to.
We have a much greater power to assimilate and digest newcomers, but it doesn't mean it can go on forever. Multiculturalism encourages group identities rather than so that patriotism becomes a kind of threat. I mean, why should they rally around the United States when they can rally around their ethnic or sexual identities?
Do you think that is the one thing that could undermine the future of the United States?
No, obviously. I think that really is a fragmenting force in America.
There's only one group of people who can solve that problem, John, and that's the small business sector of the marketplace.
You think?
I'm convinced of it. I believe it with all my heart. And thank God the 21st century is a century of the entrepreneur. John, if you want to solve what you're talking about, and my tongue is only a teeny tiny little bit in my cheek, hug a small business owner and encourage a small business owner today.
Well, you may well be right. You know lots more about that than I do.
Well, I believe that small business owners are the backbone of this economy. They're the heartbeat of this culture. And there are millions of them out there. There are tens of millions who work for them. And I believe that they trade with each other. You know what Bastiat said? When goods cross borders, armies don't, John.
Yeah, I was talking to a British person.
Hey, John, I apologize. I'm glad you got more to say.
No problem.
I'm glad you got more to say because that means maybe you'll come back another day.
Anytime.
I've had a good time. Thank you for being here, John.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Quick, I guess I got to go for this hour, ladies and gentlemen. I got so excited talking to John Leo. That was a treat for me. I really enjoyed that. I hope you did, too. We'll get him back again another day. I got to go for right now. And as you know, this program is for you. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.